All right. Hello, everyone. Can you hear Hello? Hello?
Testing.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good evening. I'd like to start the meeting tonight, 7 now, and it's April 13th, Planning Commission meeting. I'd like to bring the Planning Commission meeting to order. It looks like everyone is here. Could I have a roll call of planning commissioners, including Nancy? Thank you.
John Verrett here.
Pauline Thompson here.
Shelley Price Gibson here.
Elaine Hughes here.
Nancy Toster here.
Thank you, Tina Carlson. Thank you. All right. The next thing on the agenda is to approve the minutes, or approve the agenda. Sorry. Do we have anything to discuss on the agenda?
Just clarifying the scope of the public comments following the Lee Nellis discussion.
Yes, that's
which we discussed on the phone.
Right. So the discussion after the Lee Nellis discussion or the public comments will be on the attainable housing in regards to Lee Nellis's presentation only. So I would actually have something I wanted to change.
Okay.
After I talk to you, John. The bylaws number 8 actually starts with a discussion of the 23rd bylaw, and I'd also like to move that to the 10th place and have 9 and 10 actually moved up. That would mean that
bylaws to what?
Bylaws to 10. So continuing discussion on process improvements up, and also the discussion on future training and sessions up, and then put the bylaws in there only because it relates to the discussion beforehand a little better. That again. If that's okay with everyone else, is that okay? Sorry, Peg. We talked about it so much. Unless somebody thinks that's inappropriate, I'm fine with that.
Here, I'll make a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
I'll second it. All those in favor?
John Brath, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Shelley Price Gibson, aye.
Elaine Hughes, aye.
Okay, great. So thanks. Next is minutes. Thank you, Dalton. Okay, so can I have a motion to approve the minutes? Minutes March 9th.
Okay, I did send some comments to Peg. Did you get those all in?
Yes, I did.
All right.
Not verbatim for what you changed, but I did get them all in. So there's a Rev 2 that is actually it is uploaded to the website right now. So.
We quickly look at that.
It's identified as written.
Okay, got that.
Where were your comments?
Okay, I think right at the last sentence of Lee's.
There was a clue. Yeah, down at Lee's, beginning of your.
John said the
Rhodes comment.
Right.
I don't intend to make transcriptions of the recording, so that's what I altered. It was just paraphrasing what you.
Sure, so that's fine.
Going down a little bit, maybe. Is that what you're waiting for, John? John, the county planner and the town attorney can help.
Yeah.
Well, John talked to someone at the county.
No, I didn't talk to.
John noted the county's statement that most transportation routes in Garland County were created by prescriptive use in that plan.
Okay, yes. And you left out the part about the Lower Boulder Road. That's fine.
We were talking about the Lower Boulder Road, so yeah.
You've captured the sense there.
Okay, is there any other discussion on the minutes? Okay, can I have a motion to approve? And March 9th minutes.
I'll make the motion to approve.
John Brown, second.
Okay, can I have a vote from the commissioners?
John Brown, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Oh, it's Shelley Price Gibson, aye.
I wasn't at the March meeting, so I'm not sure I'm supposed to approve them.
No, thanks. Thanks, Elena. Nancy, actually. We don't need her, but she could.
I.
Okay, thanks, Nancy. Tina Carlson. Okay. So Lee's discussion tonight, if I have it right, Lee, is the CUP application housing reports, ordinance options. I'd like to do a little timing on this, and Lee, if it's okay with you, I'd like to have the first discussion on the application checklist to be around 30 minutes, and then go into the housing with first having short reports from each of the committees, leads on the committees, and then 30 minutes for Lee to discuss ordinance changes to address the results of all the three committees. So is that okay with you, Lee?
It's great. I think that we will not take 30 minutes on this first part.
Okay, great. All right.
But it has been communicated to me and it will become clear that the application process for conditional use permits was causing some confusion for applicants, for the zoning administrator, and as a consequence, putting some pressure on the Planning Commission to move quickly through things in meetings that you shouldn't have to do. So I began pounding together a detailed application process that spells out what's needed, what the zoning administrator needs to do, and it begins with a list of things applicants need to know. You will all remember the little flyer that we put together on subdivisions that's kind of what applicants need to know. This is perhaps the CUP version of the same thing. And all of this is, of course, in draft form and subject to improvement with your help. So the things applicants need to know, we can dash through quickly, that incomplete applications are not accepted, that once the zoning administrator finds that an application is complete, a hearing is scheduled, and that proposals are then evaluated using two different types of standards, absolute and relative. Defined and explained here, there's a fair amount of energy spent on the relative ones because they require more than just a yes, this is it, or yes, this is it with conditions, or no. Hey, can you scroll up there, please, and show us the rest of that sheet? So the definitions, the ratings are there, a definition of what the score is, a reminder that the Planning Commission may impose conditions that ensure compliance with any of the standards. And also a reminder in one sentence that you have to build what you told the Planning Commission you'd build. You're required to stick to the plans that you submitted. That's all simply there to remind the applicant and all of us what the system looks like. And then if we could go on to the next page, please. What I did, and we can stop right there, and this took, as you might imagine, quite some time, and the formatting is not yet perfect. May never be perfect, but we can probably make it a little better. Put each of the standards here, quoted from the code, and then a spot that's titled developer statement, which says here's what the developer needs to show you. And of course, in the case of this first standard, which is that commercial developments have to have direct access to Highway 12, it's very easy, either there or you're not. And then there are places where the zoning administrator goes to work, the first of which is a finding of completeness. The zoning administrator has to say yes or no, the developer, the applicant provided this information. And then the zoning administrator makes a recommendation, which could be that the standard is not applicable. For absolute standards, the zoning administrator will make a recommendation about whether there is compliance or failure. There is also a deferred planning commission box for the zoning administrator. We have some standards that involve a certain amount of discretion, that involve a certain amount of discussion, and a planning commission decision about compliance, and the administrator may feel more comfortable not making a recommendation on some of those, although I hope that some of those will also be obvious and the zoning administrator is able to make a recommendation. And that's what you would see with each of the absolute standards. Peg, can you scroll on down till we get to a relative standard, please? Keep going. There we go. Okay, so this is about buffers along the riparian corridor of Boulder Creek or other streams. And it's a standard that has multiple parts. And there is a part that addresses, well, it also has a slope part. I'm getting ahead of or behind myself here. The standard also has a number 3 on slopes, and that's where the relative comes in. The ZA, again, has to make a finding of completeness. The developer has to present a map that shows the slopes on the development site. And then because this is relative, the point scoring applies, and the zoning administrator is going to need to recommend whether this receives a 0 because it's basically not applicable, or is a wash, or whether it's going to receive, in this case, a -1 or a -2 because it fails to comply in various degrees. So what we have here going all the way through, and I think if you get the formatting corralled and are able to print this, it's 11 or 12 sheets. I think it might actually have to be expanded and put on more sheets just so it's easier to use. But we can talk about the formatting and how people would like to use this. The purpose here is for the zoning administrator to be able to sit down and go through this with an applicant, one standard at a time. And then when an application is actually filed, to go through it one standard at a time again and say, hey, I either have the information or I don't. And here is my recommendation as the zoning administrator. In the course of going through this, there are a couple of places where the codification did not pick up very well from the form that this language came to it in. And so there's some numbering issues in a couple of standards that we would have to correct at some point in the future. That's one of the realities of codification is if there's a mistake, you have to try to correct it. And mistakes are inevitable. But, that in a nutshell is what you've got. It is a way to go through in detail for the applicant working with the zoning administrator and then for the zoning administrator and preparing something for all of you. And you should have this in its complete form as part of your packet that comes to you before the meeting. And then as a planning commission member, you can rip through this, looking at the information that's attached, looking at what the zoning administrator has recommended, and be prepared. The idea, if you're using a form like this, is that planning commission members can focus on the things where the zoning administrator has said, hey, we have a failure to comply here, we got to look at that. Or where the planning commission member looks at it and says, boy, I don't know if I agree. Hopefully you can, for most projects, you can come up with a list of a half dozen or so standards that really need discussion, and the rest of them can simply be adopted. You can simply adopt the zoning administrator's recommendation and move on. I'm going to stop talking with that and see. I have one more thing to say, but I will stop talking after that one more thing and see what questions or thoughts people have about this. The one more thing to say is that in going through this, when you go through it in the detail that I did in formatting it, you begin to see where there are, again, some typographical or codification errors, a couple of places where there are typographical things. You also get a good look at the standards and, you know, see that, hey, maybe some of these, now that we've used them for a while, could be revisited. I don't think that's an urgent task. I think this is far above and beyond what we had to work with before and serves. But things like this can always be made better. And with that, I will see what thoughts or questions you all have.
Thank you, Lee. Are there any questions from the Planning Commission?
No one else?
Or comments?
I just think once it looks pretty straightforward, but I haven't really done it yet.
Yeah, what was that tonight?
For me, it just makes sense. It's pretty easy.
All right. Lee, thank you very much. As we discussed earlier today, when it comes down to the item here on the process improvement discussion that Tina has further down the agenda, I've got four specific points which I'll bring to the commission as recommendations that we go through the ordinance change process, which would in effect implement the suggestions that you have been making. So we'll be discussing that later on, but this is a really good improvement. I think it adds a lot of clarity. You did bring up formatting. I think one thing that'd be, since this is actually underlying an Excel spreadsheet, it's very easy to have an expandable box where the developer can insert their statement or say, see attached drawing or whatever in response to that. So I think this is really going to be very good for both our review process, for the applicant to understand what they have to do, and also for archiving our decision. And I think that's one of the things we have to be sure we do in the future is archive this, perhaps even as an attachment to our minutes. So very good. Thank you, Lee.
You're welcome, John.
Yeah, thanks. Okay. April, do you have anything you want to comment? Nancy, go ahead, Nancy.
I just wanted to thank you, Lee, as well, because I think, you know, if I understand what you're proposing here, that the zoning administrator will go through this process, if not once, twice with the applicant, and then bring their recommendations to the Planning Commission, which is something I brought up at the last meeting of, you know, trying to understand the role that the staff, the zoning administrator, would play in this process. And it just, I think it makes it much clearer and much easier for the Planning Commission to then respond. So I agree with John. I think this is a significant improvement to what we saw previously. So thank you for the effort on this.
Sure. I guess one thing that is worth mentioning here, John and I hit on this in a conversation earlier today, is that I'm not sure that the zoning administrator's duties are very well spelled out anywhere. And this, at least for the processing of commercial applications, puts, you know, what the zoning administrator needs to be doing out in a very straightforward fashion. We need to make sure that we make that job equally clear on other counts, whether it's other types of zoning applications or subdivision. We're going to have to rewrite subdivision entirely as a result of the legislature gifting us the recent changes. We'll be starting on that from ground zero. But we need to keep in mind that the zoning administrator needs direction. And I hope that this provides that.
Well, I'm not sure as far as my duties that I should be making any recommendations. My job is to make sure the application's complete. If it complies or it fails, it is the Planning Commission's job to decide, and it's not mine. So I don't know if I should be making any recommendations.
I appreciate your comment, April, because that is exactly what I discussed with Lee. Your duties do imply it in a couple general statements, which I'll discuss later, but we should make it explicit because it's very inefficient if all five of us are expected to go through the entire application. Headwaters is straightforward, others are more detailed, and expect all five of us to score it individually. Much more efficient for the applicant to work with you. If you say, hey, this fails, then the applicant can say, well, what do I have to do to comply? That's the interpreting the zoning rules, which isn't clearly in your duties, and then amend it before it comes to us.
Yeah, but with these checklists, it's up to you guys for your discretion. It's not for me. If it doesn't comply, it doesn't comply. And then if you want more of a buffer, that's not my decision to make. I can guide them to say they may want this, but it's not my decision, and that's not my job to do.
No, but I think we can define it within your scope to make a recommendation on whether their application not only is complete in terms of the information being there, but complies with the intent of the ordinance. But that's exactly what we need to discuss later on in this meeting, and then work with you on the specific wording.
Right. It's more of an admin role to make sure they follow the ordinance. Things are complete. If it's not complete, I'm not going to approve the application. Then I shouldn't be making any other decisions.
Well, I think
because that's part of the Planning Commission's role.
Our job is to review.
We'll
do that later.
Thank you.
Well, this little interchange just points up the need to have clarity. Wherever you land, without making any assumptions one way or the other, there needs to be clarity for April or whoever fills that job in the future about what the role is. And I think we can leave it at that for this evening to just say that the clarity is very important go from there. But I think right now the feedback that I'm getting tells me that while this can probably be improved, there's probably somebody out there who's better at this type of formatting than I am. This can be improved some. We're on the right track for a way to get everyone to proceed. To me, if you guys are reading and reviewing this and you want to know what my main desire for input is, the main thing I'd like to hear from you about is whether what we ask the developer for is clear. Okay, so we have all these developer statement entries into this, one for each standard, or sometimes for a group of standards. And it would be really, really helpful to me to have you all read it and say, hey, that request to the developer either is or is not as clear as it ought to be. I make assumptions about how this works based on long experience. And sometimes I read things as being more clear or easier than they really are, right? And so if you guys, as Planning Commission members, Can take a minute, and certainly this is a lot of stuff, but if you can say, hey, if I were applying for a permit, what I need to do is clear. And April, you can kick in here too, because you're the one who's going to be explaining it. If one of these developer statement requests can be improved, that's really probably the most crucial thing in the form, is to give the applicants the best clarity we can give them. And with that, unless there's other questions, I think we could move on.
Any other questions? Comments? Okay.
I basically just have a comment, and I think that as we use this, because we went from the development standards that we have to this, once we start using this, and April has more input, that we'll be able to figure this out. I mean, as far as who does what on this, once we start using that, do you feel like that's part of it too? Is that will mean, does it, I mean, it just feels like we're always kind of moving forward as far as, and once we use something, then we are able to clarify it more. Does that make sense? As far as what April's going to do and what, you know, what the planning commission does. Is that where we're heading to, because there isn't clarification?
Well, I think that we are in the job of increasing clarity here, right? And the original checklist is certainly a good tool, and it's still a tool, although the numbering on it is wrong, because when they codified, of course, the old numbers on the checklist no longer hooked to the standards. That's easy to fix. But we need to learn by experience, as you're suggesting, always, and make changes as we go. And that also applies to the substance of the standards, which I don't think we want to address until we've gotten through some other work. But eventually, we even want to go through and talk about the standards themselves once we've had some experience. And, you know, you're going to gain a little more experience tonight with the application that you have in front of you. People need to think about what was clear, what wasn't, if something wasn't, and how we can better communicate the town's intent. But yeah, it's a matter of iteration after iteration of these things until you get them as good as you can.
Okay, great. Thank you. So the next part is about the changes possibly to the ordinance for the attainable housing. And this is, this section will start with some kind of short report from each group, and Elena hasn't had a chance to really report on her survey yet, so you go ahead and go first, Elena, and if you need a little more time, that's fine.
Okay, cool. So the survey that we sent out both to the housing group and for them to send to people they know and via Pegboard, we got 38 responses, which I was happy with. I'll give you guys some of like the my main takeaways, I guess. And then at some point, I mean, I could even share my screen and we could go through the responses, but I don't know how much time we have. And at some point I could write up more of a report. 38 responses. It was almost half couples and then some families, some individuals. More than half of the people have been in Boulder for 5 to 10 years or more. 80% of people were looking for home ownership. 20% were looking for year-round rentals, and 0% were looking for seasonal rentals. I feel like that, if nothing else, is almost the biggest takeaway I had. Half of people said that if they could not achieve home ownership in Boulder, they would likely seek it elsewhere rather than continuing to stay in their rental or looking for a new rental. Let's see. There was interest in rent to own and also land trust options. About 75% people said they'd be interested in rent to own. And then I think about half of people said they'd be willing to consider housing with capped appreciation values. And then another might have been 20% or so said kind of maybe they would need more information about that kind of thing. But so it seems like in general, there is some interest in kind of thinking outside the box a little bit on some of these things. As we expected, there was a lot of interest from folks in having some garden space, chickens. Yeah, people are really interested in having a little bit of land. There was some interest in the concept of owning a home, but not owning the land around it. I think there could potentially be more interest in that if people understood it better. I gave like brief descriptions of the options on the survey, but it was hard to go into too much detail. But if people had a better understanding of that, they might be interested. Though I do think there are some people who, yeah, like actual land ownership feels important to them. Lee and I had discussed trying to get a better sense of how many people might be interested in like have like an agricultural enterprise that they might be looking for land for if we were able to find, you know, a chunk of open space or whatever that could be shared among growers. So of the 38 people that responded, six of them had an existing agriculture enterprise that they're looking for land for, and five had hopes of having one. Income-wise, I would say it was actually pretty split of the different options that we had, but the largest category was that the household income was between 20 and 30,000 a year. So thinking about the fact that most of our applicants were couples, that's yeah, combined. And then another 15% of the applicants or so were under 20,000 a year. For rentals, it seemed about average people would pay, you know, between 700 and 1,000 a month for a suitable rental. There were some responses lower, some responses higher, but that seemed to be an okay target. There was a question about how much people would be willing to spend on a home to own also. And those, I can spend some more time with those responses, but they were way more across the board. It wasn't a multiple choice. It was sort of a, like, enter what you think is reasonable. And there was no great pattern that I noticed. Yeah, I feel those are like kind of my main takeaways. I feel really grateful that so many people took the survey and participated. That was a good response rate as far as I was concerned, and way more people than are in the housing group. And I had a few people email back from the PEG board and say that they'd be interested in being in the housing group. So that's great too. Yeah, those are my main things.
Good job. So tell me again, how many people, Lena?
38 people took the survey.
Great.
Shelley, what were you going to ask?
Yeah. Hey, yeah. Elizabeth.
No, you said Alina.
You said half were couples, five plus years had been here, right? What's the next one you said? I missed that.
Yeah, let me look at what I start here. Yeah, so couples have been in Boulder. Oh, it might have been this one. 80% of people were looking for home ownership. 20% were looking for year-round rentals, and 0% were looking for seasonal rentals.
That to me is amazing, huh?
That's changed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it might trend that direction, but I was kind of surprised quite how much. Yeah.
Could there be some bias because you did that survey in the winter when a lot of the seasonal workers might not be in town?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, it went out on PEG board, and the people in the housing survey, I did encourage, or the housing group, I did encourage them to send it to people they know. Yeah, hard to say, I guess, in a way, but I kind of feel like the people who are looking for housing are probably paying attention to what's going on in town on PEG board and stuff.
I feel like it's changed because of how everything has changed in the last 3 or 4 years, and how even employment has changed, how people are employed.
Yeah.
And it really, I feel like it really shows that as far as what's happened through the pandemic and how people feel about their living situations and their working situations.
Yeah, I think people are, yeah. Another thing, Colleen, that brings up, it's not one of the ones that I starred as a highlight, but 40% of the people were self-employed, which was more than I was expecting. And 38, so less than that, were employed in town at the local businesses. Very few did remote work, I think 5%. And then the 16% was other. I put another category. And then once I got 16% of other, I was like, oh, what does that mean? But most people were self-employed. And I think that kind of speaks, Colleen, to what you're saying of the way people are working in town is kind of shifting a little bit. And I think that's great in a way because, yeah, more people looking for year round and trying to be here all the time and contribute to the economy and stuff. That seems good to me.
Part of the community.
Yeah.
That's really great, Alina. I just want to let you know that a written report would be great for our record if you can do that for us in some form as soon as you have the time. I know you're really busy right now, so but you're always busy.
I can do it.
Okay. So, John, do you want to go next? Do you have anything?
Can I make a comment? Sure. Don't you think it was obvious? I mean, it stuck out to me that, you know, the 38 that response, the percentage of them were only making from 20 to 30,000.
Huge.
But yeah, and what their rental is between, she said, I think it was 700 to 1,000. The disposable income of that is amazing to me, you know, not very much.
No.
Just
interesting.
Well, more than interesting, it really underlies the problem because although they 80% want home ownership, with $30,000 a year income, you couldn't buy anything over about $200,000, maybe $150,000. So there is a really big economic gap in this town between the real estate prices and the local wages. And that's kind of one reason why I hope Lee talks about deed restrictions to keep housing in the affordable, attainable range, because and it's not here, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Incomes just aren't keeping up with real estate prices.
But it's interesting to be here and see how inventive, when I look at that age, how they're doing it, because they want to be here.
Yes.
You know?
Great. Any other comments on this before we move on?
It's interesting too, because we never talk really about, and I think this is something that's come down to, we've just started talking about, is the economics here in town as far as what our town can do as far as bringing in better jobs, you know, in the realm of what we want in our general plan. And I think that's something to really look into, because I don't think we've ever really looked at that. And towns do that. That's how you bring people in, is to have good jobs for them. So, you know, it's a whole different subject, but it's something that maybe the town needs to start looking into.
See, and to find out what's needed here is how we get somebody in here.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Can we move on to John?
Okay. Real briefly, I've reported before, I've had some good email exchanges with some of the property owners who potentially could be the solutions to some of these problems. There are a few people I need to follow up with. One who is just coming back in the room who hasn't. I was just using your name here.
Oh,
yeah. You haven't responded to my emails from the property owners working group.
Oh,
did you say she's the only one?
No, she's not the only one. There's several others. So I'm going to follow up with you because I really do need the input because I think it's real important that the large landowners, they're the ones who can come up with the land that's needed for development. They could come up with the land that's needed for some of these visionary agricultural projects. They need to be at the table in the planning process to come up with ordinance changes that really make sense. And somebody could say, yes, as an investor, this makes sense to me. It's the sort of thing I might be willing to consider. So There are several others I do have to follow up with, but that's an ongoing process, and I hope to get something. So,
okay.
I wasn't thinking of
it.
I'm so sorry. I'll do great. I'll probably give you a phone call. All right. But that's the main, the things that keep coming up. I think everyone is saying the 5-acre zoning is a problem. You know, as Josh Ellis has said, you know, too big to garden, too small to ranch, although Elena is making something work on 5 acres, but that's a challenge. But it encourages the chopping up good agricultural land into 5-acre ranchettes that somebody puts a second home on because that they can afford to do with 5 acres. So that one comes up repeatedly. We've talked about some creative things in terms of changing the zoning to allow higher density duplexes, things like that. So I'll put that also in a written report here in the next month or so.
Okay, great. So I actually have done this report, but I'm also going to just, I think I'll just skip mine other than, let me see if there's anything here I wanna add. There was definitely an interest in looking at our general plan and suggesting the goal of 2% increase in the housing market and then make basically base our development or our ordinance on a by need basis and not give incentives that just allow developers to do whatever, you know, more than actually the growth of the town can handle. Anyway, or even wants to in their vision. So I don't know if that makes any sense. I think that's the only one I wanted to put. ADUs, multiple living spaces, all were part of their suggestion. So Lee, I'll let you take it away.
Okay, I'm gonna try to share my screen here. You cannot start screen sharing while the other participant is sharing. Okay, there we go. Good, thank you, Peg. Let me get this into slideshow mode and we'll come on. What I've tried to do is to
not sharing, Lee.
Is everybody seeing that?
No.
Okay. Let me see what I need to.
I also have it up if you need it.
Well, give me one little shot here at it. Okay, it's still telling me I can't share my screen. Okay, let's try this. Have you got it? Share. That should work.
Yep, there you go.
Got green slides. Okay, excellent. Get this in slideshow mode and go on. Or maybe we'll just do it this way so I can see where I'm going ahead. Well, we've been talking about two things for a long time, which is protecting critical open space. We talk about it mostly in terms of agriculture, and that's really what Boulder is about. There are other open spaces that have to come into the accounting, and also trying to figure out attainable housing. What I didn't put on here, and believe I should, is attainable farmland, attainable land for artisanal and you know, small agricultural enterprises. But however we do the list of what we're trying to achieve, there are certain questions that need to be answered. And I put together a little presentation tonight with a somewhat tangible example to talk about those questions. What I have here, and if some of you think about the different properties in Boulder, you will know that I am abstracting and simplifying a particular chunk of land and showing you sort of what the numbers would be like, although I've made the numbers nice round numbers for the ease of the math. Let's say you have 60 acres, more or less. There is a public road that runs down the west side of it, and there's one existing dwelling on it. Out of the 60 acres, give or take, 36 are irrigated. So what about this piece of land makes a difference in what you can achieve there? This is a very simple example. There is one home. 60% of it, give or take, is in irrigation. It is a long, narrow parcel, and that changes some things around about how you get access and how you lay out lots, if you're going to lay out lots. Access obviously makes a difference. We've had so many conversations about access. This one I selected because it is easy. And then the rules that apply make a very big difference. And where I want to head next with this drawing is the rules. So this is 60 acres hacked up into 5-acre parcels. There's 12 of them by the basic math. And I have scattered 11 homes onto the 11 parcels. The one existing dwelling gets 5 acres. And as you can see, the easiest way to chop this up, and it's very easy because there's a road running up and down the entire western boundary of the parcel. People are going to make their own decisions about where to put a house or not. A lot of those houses in this parcel would be affected and probably adversely affected by both surface and groundwater issues. And then there's a dry part of the parcel where those issues don't apply. But that's what the existing zoning basically calls for. And you have to decide if this is really what you want when you think about people's need for housing, when you think about people's desire. I mean, that's a large number of people that Elena found who might want to be participating in some type of agricultural enterprise. And it's true that you could take one of these 5-acre parcels and begin doing some things with it. But there are some issues about that and other issues about this as well. We're ending up with 12 driveways onto a public road, 12 dwellings, a number of which are going to be affected by high water table issues. And of course, their sewage disposal system will be affected by that as well. Can we build an attainably affordable house on 5 acres? No, we can't do that. Not going to happen. If we cut that irrigated parcel into 8 lots, what's going to happen with its management? There's going to be more fences. If any one of those 8 landowners fails to pay attention, there's going to be more weeds, right? And that landowner will dominate what the others are able to do. And is it more productive? Now, that's an empirical question. You know, I ran into some people when I was doing a project in New Mexico who made a living in agriculture on about 1.5 acres. And their agricultural enterprise was cut flowers. It was brutally hard work. But they actually were making an okay living selling cut flowers off 1.5 acres. So you can use a 5-acre lot for some of these enterprises, but would it be better to manage this collectively among producers? There are certainly a lot of options. Besides the 5-acre lot. And so as I go through here, I'd like to share the logic of this before I take questions, but we will have plenty of questions. So my question to myself is, and a question we've all been talking about, is there a better way to do this, to continue agriculture, encourage attainable housing, and maybe support some small farm enterprises as well? Well, yeah. One way to do it is to set the density, the number of homes that are permitted free, and let them drift around. And we're going to go through some different iterations of how that might look. There's 36 acres of irrigated land here. And in an ideal world, we wouldn't use that 36 acres for a dwelling, both because we want the agricultural potential and because the high water table in irrigated areas tends to put some real limitations on the on-site disposal of waste. And so I squished this down into some lots. You would get the existing house plus 11 lots there. And at this, these boxes are somewhat more than 1 acre. And easily, this isn't cramming it in. Easily can put the 11 units that you would have gotten in the other lots and add 4 more. without even trying. The exact number is not so important here in this drawing. It's just to say, hey, look, this drawing illustrates the principle that we shove homes off of the productive land into land that is, and in this case of this particular parcel, there is not a whole lot of terrain or topographic limitation. It's a place where you can put some dwelling units. So that's what it looks like there. And I'm going to go through a run of the questions, go into another alternative, and then come back to the questions. But the questions that you have to answer to make what I showed in that slide work are these. How big does the incentive to make the density drift around have to be? The size and the shape and the nature of the parcel are going to put limitations pretty much uniquely for each piece of land, right, on how practical it is to use whatever incentive we provide. There will be people who could use more. There will be people who are not able to use whatever it is you decide to do. Does the developer have to protect 100% of the open space to qualify for the incentive? Could there be a sliding scale of protecting a certain share of that? There could be. There are systems that exist in the world that work that way. What is the smallest acceptable minimum lot size that you're willing to have in a situation like this? That, in some ways, is the single most rigid limiting factor. And then, finally, how much of what the community is willing to give as an incentive has to be deed-restricted attainable housing? You know, we're trading off some issues here to have smaller lots and to have more lots, as you will see when we get down a slide or two. If you're going to provide that type of incentive, and it, strangely enough, it's an incentive that is anticipated in the legislature's latest attempt to make the lives of small towns miserable. But how much of an incentive are you going to have to offer to get people to do deed-restricted housing? There is one more alternative that's necessary to throw in here, though, and that helps you think about the answer to those questions. What if I own two parcels in town, or I have a good friend who I trust to do business with who has a parcel that is perhaps more accessible, more desirable for development, doesn't have the potential conflict with the irrigation? Could I move some or all of those units over to that other parcel? There are systems that work like this. It's very easy if it's the same landowner, right? They're using their own assets to their own best advantage. And I've shown this as an all or nothing scenario here with my little diagram, but it wouldn't have to be. You could move half of them. You could move a quarter of them. The important thing here is to give landowners as much flexibility as we reasonably can within the goals the town is trying to accomplish. Right now, landowners don't really have very much flexibility. They can't even average out lot size, since every lot has to be a minimum of 5 acres. So there are a lot of ways that we can provide flexibility that benefits landowners and still provides the things that the community is interested. So where am I at here? There we go. The questions are all about how density can go. And the answers that you're going to need to provide if this is what you want to make possible. You can start anywhere in this, but I wanted to do some math and show you how it looks. So the question that I started with is, how big does the incentive have to be? The old cluster provisions that are in the existing subdivision regulations and that for various practical reasons are simply not an incentive to anyone, allowed 2.5 acre lots. So I started with the idea of 2.5 acre lots and then went back to that parcel land where there is 36 acres of irrigated and 24 acres of dry. And I divided the 36 that we would like to protect by the 2.5, and then divided the 24 that are dry by the 5 that they would get anyway. And I came up with 19 units instead of 12. So if you were the owner of that parcel, would an additional, the ability to sell or lease an additional 7 units be enough of an incentive? And if you're the community, we have to ask how many of those 19 should be attainable, be deed restricted to be attainable since we're providing this incentive. So that's the math. If you start with the idea of 2.5 acre lots, let's look at some more math just so we see how this can play out. Back again to the question of how big does this incentive have to be? So I did a version where we also broke the dry that doesn't have to be protected into 2.5 instead of 5. So that doubled what was possible there, and we end up with 24 possible units, doubling the 12 that would otherwise be there. Is that enough? Is that enough of an incentive to get the landowner to protect that irrigated land and provide some attainable housing? And then finally, let's move the math on forward here. And go down as far as I think you can realistically go with minimum lot sizes, or with average lot sizes. We're not really doing minimums. If you need more of an incentive, suppose that you divide that 36 acres of the irrigated that you're trying to protect by 1.25 acres. And then the 24 that's dry, you just leave it the 5 that it would have gotten no matter what. That gets us up to 34 units instead of 12. Is that enough of an incentive? And how many out of those 34 do we want to be deed restricted so that they remain attainable to people with modest incomes? A few things that affect your answer on the numbers is, of course, that each parcel is a little different and that you're going to see as many variations on this as there are parcels. Some of them may be very similar, but this is, and I think this is an advantage of this. We're not treating every piece of land as if it were flat and square. We're treating them for the character they actually have. You can't make this work without having lot sizes be an average instead of a minimum. The controlling factors, really the biggest controlling factor is what's the smallest acceptable minimum lot size? Is it 1 acre? I was using 1.25. And then the other controlling factor is how much of what you're willing to let people have as an incentive in extra lots, how much of that has to be attainable housing. My guess is that we are in the neighborhood of 20%. This is a trial and error thing. You would have to try it and see how it goes through time. And really, the next step in the process, I'm going to switch over to questions here, but the next step in the process is for the Planning Commission to answer those questions that I just posed and to go through whatever discussion is required. Alternatively, you can say, no, none of this makes any sense. That's your choice. I'm simply here to show you that there is a way to attain some of the things that you're trying to attain. There is a way to get closer to affordable housing, attainable housing. There probably is going to have to be subsidies further than just letting the landowners have more density for many people. It's the nature of the beast as it stands right now. And, you know, are we really going to protect the agricultural space? It seems to me that there is a tremendous potential for small enterprises in Boulder that would employ both the proprietors and employees. Elena, you went and talked to the folks in Fort Collins, right?
I ended up just talking to her on the phone because she wasn't able to meet in person.
Oh, okay. Well, Stacy, yeah. And I've had conversations with people who are doing this as well. And, you know, there are some good models. There are not a lot of them, but there's some good models of how properties like this could be managed cooperatively for small producers. I'm hoping to go down and take a look in person at a really successful one in Massachusetts sometime in May. So yeah, there's going to have to be creativity above and beyond what we do with the land use regulations to make this happen. But we can't do any of it. None of the rest of the creativity is relevant unless you're willing to work with the land use regulations. And with that, the sun is setting on me here. I want to hear your questions and your thoughts about this. You know, from the point of view of saying, okay, are we willing to do this? And are we willing to make some choices about those critical numbers? If you choose the numbers, it's not very hard to write this up into the form of an ordinance.
Great. Thanks, Lee. I would like to let this be, this section include a question to Lee. We have another section in our meeting where we're actually discussing this. So if you have questions to Lee about, you know, what he's presented, Lee, I'm sorry, we're just going to make sure that we have time later on in the meeting
to
go over this a little bit as a group. And then, so does that make, is that agreeable to everyone? It's so questions, and can I start? What is, I'm not sure of your math. I'm assuming we'll get this,
it's online.
It's online now? It's online. Oh, it's online now. Okay, great. So we can go through this, but can you just show me some of the math on the incentive part one more time?
Let's go back here to, let's do the first one. So we have 60 acres.
Uh-huh.
From our point of view, it's divided into two pieces that we want to think about separately. One is a 24-acre piece, one is a 36-acre piece. And the question, well, not the question, the goal, as I have assumed it here, is that we would like to leave that 36 acres that are irrigated in agriculture and not have housing development there.
Right.
And we're okay with development on the other 24 acres where there is already one home. And so we have to pick a number to start with, right? This is trial and error. And I started my trial and error using that 2.5 acre lot size that's in the subdivision regs right now. It's a moribund possibility in there, but that's something that people in Boulder at one time must have thought was acceptable. So I said, okay, let's start with what people some years ago must have thought was acceptable. Let's divide the 36 acres by 2.5 and you come up with 14.4. You know, and fractional lots obviously don't end up existing in reality, but to do the math totally, we will keep the fraction for the time being. So what we're saying is that if you were willing to protect that 36 acres, leave it in a block as irrigated land, you would get 14.4 lots out of it. Whereas before there were only 8. Not a bad increase. Maybe not enough, but not a bad jump. On the 24, in this scenario, and we can come up with numerous scenarios, and this scenario is like, well, that land would be divided by 5 under the present ordinance, right? And you would come up with 4 lots, 4.8, but you don't get a 0.8 lot. But if you add 4.8 to 14.4, you come up with a 19.2. Pulling that down to the 19, that's 7 more lots than you would have gotten had you said, no, I'm not going to protect that irrigated land. And then, of course, we would have a conversation about how many out of those 19 should be attainable. I'm thinking 5, but at the 20% level, so, or 4. Those are the questions you have to answer. That's how the math goes, is you're dividing the acreage in the different categories by a trial lot size. And in this case, lot sizes that are based in something that's happened or is happening in Boulder. You don't have to stick with things that have happened in the past, of course, And that brings you down to the final scenario that I did. We're going to allow quite a bit of a reward here for protecting that 36 acres of irrigated land. Ends up being 28.8 units or lots. The 24 acres is divided by five as before. The total comes up to 33.6. And that would be really stuffing it on this particular piece of property. I'm not sure this is actually feasible that they could use the entire incentive. But, you know, if your incentive is 34 and you can use 27 of it, is that enough to get you to protect the agricultural land and build some houses, or at least provide for building some houses by creating lots and to put a deed restriction on 20% of those lots?
Okay, thank you.
Everybody clear? It takes going through this. It's not really, it's just a different way of thinking about the world that we don't normally do. But it's not very hard. And you guys can do any scenario that you want to. I've got some on a spreadsheet here for 2-acre lots and so on. They're all within the range of things that I have shown you. You know, there are a lot of ways to start this conversation, but one of the starting points that I would direct you to is down here on this slide, which is, you know, what's the smallest lot size you're willing to accept? I used 1.25 acres in the math up there. You could go as low as 1 and still comply with the state health rules. So are you willing to accept that? Or do you need to inch that up? That's a conversation you all need to have. It's not something that's scientific or that there's some sort of direct guidance for. It's about your perception of the character a Boulder. And, you know, once you've got that controlling factor figured out, then the next controlling factor is how many of those lots, in order to provide this incentive to a landowner, how many of those lots have to be deed restricted for attainable housing? I've thrown 20% out here as a shot in the dark. You could make it more, you could make it less. Much less than that, I don't know what you're gaining, but you could give it a shot with more. So any final questions for me?
Yeah, you said you'd offer where it has worked. Do you know places they've done this?
Oh yeah, there are loads of places that do this type of clustering to protect agricultural land. The housing component of it is not as common, but the whole countryside of the state of Maryland, this idea of clustering to protect agriculture really took off the ground in Maryland first in the 60s. They've been doing this for 50 years. And if you drive through like the Eastern Shore agricultural counties in Maryland, you will see cluster after cluster of farmland where an incentive like this was offered to the farmer so that he or she could take advantage of the money from selling the housing while continuing to be in business. And all through New England, New York, the Northeastern United States, this is there, but it's not hard to find in Oregon or California, Washington. I did work with one up in Fremont County, Idaho, which is more rural, more in the middle of the Rocky Mountains. And they set aside a big chunk. It wasn't farmland in that case. They set aside a big chunk of elk habitat in exchange for the incentive to put in what turned out to be. There was not an affordable housing part of that. The homes around that elk habitat are all 1 million plus. But they still did preserve a goodly open chunk of elk habitat that was on their private and that connected to adjoining national forest land. So it's not hard to find examples of this. The Swanner development up in Park City, probably everybody in the room is driven by that. And when the Swanners went to work on that, they had a lot of wetlands that had to be, that were hard to develop, whether they were preserved by law or not. And you can see that you've got several hundred acres worth of development rights stuffed into a corner there where all the stores and their education center is, right by the interchange off I-80 there. So this is not mysterious. It is not new. Like I said, the people in Maryland have been doing this since the middle 60s. And you just have to decide if this is what you want to try to make happen in Boulder.
Anyone else? Yeah, I have one more. Hey, Lee, you have made, I've really been studying about the, you know, the clustering and how to, when we are making rules and ordinances and so on, keep a constant standard. If we open this up, because we've had that 5 acre minimum for a long time, correct? Mm-hmm. Is this going to change that part of us and make it more difficult for the planning of our area because we're not keeping this as a standard?
Well, what makes things difficult for you right now is the 5 acre standard. People can't afford to be there because that much land is so expensive. The community is being watered down because the people who can mainly afford those parcels are people who will not be community members all year round. So, you know, the hope here, my hope, and I think some other people in the room share it, is that you can maintain the character of Boulder. And the character of Boulder is not about, and this is just an outsider, somebody who knows Boulder pretty well and has been passing through there since, was the first time I passed through Boulder, 1982, 1983, sometime in there, it all blurs. The character of Boulder is about the scale of the business enterprises and the development. It's about the trees along Boulder Creek. And it's more than any other one thing about those green irrigated lands standing out in such stark contrast to the sandstone. And it doesn't depend, it never has depended, and does not depend now, on a 5 acre minimum lot size. You haven't developed enough of those 5 acre lots that it begins to really look cluttered in most places. And, you know, there's plenty of time to make a change that protects bigger chunks of open space and provides, along with some other support, some housing that might be more affordable and some opportunities for small agricultural enterprises that might be productive. You know, you guys were talking there about what opportunities do people have? How do we attract people to the community? And I was surprised. I think it's fascinating that only 5% of Elena's people were remote workers. I would have expected that to be a bit higher. But what you've got is a lot of people who are interested in some type of agriculture. I suspect there are also a lot of people who are interested in other types of craftsmanship or art who can't find a place to be in Boulder right now, given their incomes, because of the 5 acre lot size. So if you want to maintain the character of Boulder as a small outpost in the middle of the sandstone, which is how I first saw it all those years ago, that shows up green when you're looking down on the approach. If you want there to be a viable community holding that agricultural land together, then the biggest obstacle to your character is the 5 acre minimum.
And okay, do we have another question?
I was just going to remark that in addition to the, Lee, I'm glad you mentioned Summit County. They are certainly have addressed these issues and have some ordinances that we can look at whether they're working or not working well. Grand County has also used this idea of clustering and also mandating a certain percentage of affordable housing in new subdivisions. So that's another place where we're closer by that we use as an example to say what's worked and what hasn't worked.
And I will tell you, John, and you know this because you own property there. I did the first real comprehensive plan for Grand County in the mid-90s and wrote their set of impact fees that they still use for their roads and stormwater drainage and fire protection. And in the mid-90s, nobody would ever have talked about open space development patterns, clustering. And you can see what they did to Spanish Valley as a result. You've got a formerly agricultural area that is not anymore. And that's where Boulder, on a smaller scale, Boulder would fit into Spanish Valley pretty easily. On a smaller scale, Boulder is headed that direction unless you're able to find a way to change.
Great. Thank you so much, Lee. And we'll make sure that you get our remarks as soon as possible.
Right, right. Yeah. No, And the other thing I will say is that if any of you as individuals have a question, want to be sure you understand how this works, I'm willing to talk to Planning Commission members on the phone and say, well, you know, can I help? Hopefully this is clear enough that we don't have to do too much of that. And, you know, with that, I'm going to take off and let you guys work on your application and have some discussion.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you. Next, I'm just going to allow public comments at this point that is basically for any comments about what Aline Ellis just presented to us. If anyone wants to comment, just come up to the speaker. I can't get the other speaker or phone. And then we'll, do you have any comments? Okay. Just come up to that last speaker. So just state your name and then your comment.
Randy Hardman. I do find value in the clustering because, you know, you have to take in consideration water, sewage, roads, and, you know, on 5-acre parcels, you're basically having to dig new wells for each one, and we all know how difficult that can be. And with the requirements, the current building requirements with sewage and so on and so forth, and just roads in itself. I mean, it is a very expensive endeavor to just develop land, let alone housing. And everybody knows that the cost of everything has gone up. So it's hard for people to develop to see. It just is not really going to be affordable for anybody. Really, when you get down to the brass tacks of what it really costs to build. And then there's also a huge shortage in labor. Just to get a general contractor, you know, you're on a 2.5-year waiting list. So unless it does make it easier for those that want to develop, you know, to provide housing, there's got to be, you know, some sort of, you know, give and take with the acreage. So I do think clustering is a good idea. What that means, you know, in the bigger picture, I don't have an acre or 2 acres in mind. It's just cost down.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Is there anyone online that wants to comment? We are going to discuss this as the Planning Commission.
Hi. You said we were only supposed to comment on Lee Nellis's. We couldn't comment on the other parts of the discussion. Is that right?
Yes.
Anyway, I'd support it. But I wanted to just make one comment on, I so appreciate that Elena got a survey. We really need data. We need like real information, hard information about our community. And it was great that Elena was able to get that. And I want to thank her for that. I did want to just put in a plug for the comment on the seasonal worker. They weren't included in that survey. My guess is there were no seasonal workers that were part of the survey. So they didn't get included, not because you excluded them or anything. They just, but I think that the seasonal workers are important to include in that because the seasonal workers are a major pipeline to full-time people. I can think of so many people who started as seasonal people, needed housing, and then turned into full-time members of the community. So I think that's really important to include that. But anyway, I love a lot of the concepts and I appreciate you guys are doing this. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jennifer. Okay, I'm going to just say that we are discussing this further, hopefully towards the end of the meeting, and there will be more an option and other option comments. Thank you. So the next thing we're going to do is to get to our our public hearing.
So maybe that's what we were supposed to
do. I'm going to actually follow what we have been looking at as a draft for our public hearing process. So it might sound a little different for people. I'd like to have a motion from the to close the meeting and open the public hearing for the guest ranch. Yes, Headwaters Guest Ranch.
Public meeting and open the discussion on the ranch.
Thanks, Shelley. Mm-hmm. Do you have a second? Ranch. Okay.
Second.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
John Durant, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Shelley Price Gibson, aye.
Lena Hughes, aye.
Carl's and I. Okay, pass. Let's see. This hearing is for the public input on the conditional use permit for a guest ranch as part of the Headwaters Cattle and Guest Ranch Incorporated, located at 4270 North Highway 12. A guest ranch is an accessory use that provides supplementary income to working ranches. A guest ranch may be established only in conjunction with an existing continuing livestock operation that qualifies as a farm use under the Utah Farmland Assessment Act standards and practices of practice. A guest ranch includes overnight guests, lodging units, recreation activities that are on site and originate on site or originate on site, and the food service for the guests only. Okay. This was posted April 4th. This hearing was posted April 4th at the town web on the town website and on the Utah Public Notice website and the town bulletin. Am I correct? Peg, correct? That's correct. There is a member of the PC who would like to, if there is, there's a member of the PC who would like to declare a potential conflict of interest. Please state any conflict of interest that anybody on the PC has. No one. So April will give her give your report. This report just is history, dates of application to determine complete and any other relevant procedures, procedural facts. So this is your report, basically, April, that you.
Yeah, so it's 165-acre working ranch, and the guest ranch has been existing since late 2021. It was brought to our attention that they did not do a CUP, and during that same time, the ordinance for guest ranches that we currently use have been in place. So there was just there's been a gap. And so that is why this application is coming forward when we realized that they did not do CUP. They currently have three rental units that adds up to 6 bedrooms and staff housing on site. And their access is off Highway 12, which they do have a permit from UDOT. And I think since everything is existing and they are not intending to add any additional buildings at this time, and their water is through a spring, the application was completed on March 23rd, and then I forwarded it on. So they meet all the requirements under our ordinance.
Okay, so we're going to use statements instead of comments. Statements are addressing compliance with the ordinances, and anyone who would like to make a statement, raise their hand. I will take statements until everyone has had a chance. If there's, you know, if you want to double up, that's fine. When called, please state your name and then make your statement. And the PC will not answer any questions, but can ask for clarification of any statements. So this is the chance for the public to make any statements based on this application. Do we have anybody in the public who wants to make a statement about this conditional use permit for a guest ranch? Okay, I'll take that as a no. Were there any written comments? No written comments. Applicant, if you want to make a statement, you can, but obviously you don't have anything to besides your application at this point, but do you want to come up here? I feel it'd be questioned. Thanks, Brandon.
All right, no public comments, then you can close.
Okay. Did you have anything you wanted to have in the public hearing at all?
You have a time to talk.
If you'd like to make a statement, that's fine.
Not really. I mean, I
think it's a great application process.
Thank you.
All right. So I need to have a motion to close the public hearing and move to the PC meeting again.
I'll make a motion to close this
public hearing.
Public hearing. Okay. Thank you. Shelley Price Gibson.
I'll make a second. Colleen Thompson.
Could I have a vote from the commission?
John Grant, aye.
Amy Hughes, aye.
Shelley Price Gibson, aye.
Colleen?
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye. Thank you. All right, so we're at the our discussion in the meeting. So I guess let's just start with the Planning Commission. Are there any questions specifically for April that you might want to ask about the application that we got? Okay, then I think we'll just go ahead and proceed with the checklist. actually, I have a couple of questions. I'm sorry. There's no one who will actually be living on the ranch. Is that correct?
That's incorrect.
No, there is somebody living on the ranch.
Oh, okay. It just wasn't clear where they were living.
They're in the staff housing, I believe, in the garage.
Yes, which we call the shop.
Oh, I didn't catch that. Okay. All right. So how many, I didn't see, like, how many people can that facility actually provide housing for?
total? Provide housing for employees.
I mean, how many people can use the guest ranch at the same time? I mean, total.
It depends on if they're fully. So I would just say anywhere from, you know, one up to about 20.
Okay, that's great. And okay, so that's great. There was one other thing. In the application, you stated that the large size and normal shape majority of the subject, I assume, is the land usable for development. The large size.
There's two parcels, and so she was referring to the parcels.
Okay, so there's two parcels on the property.
It's kind of your property's kind of divided.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay. And the 165 acres is the
total
of those two parcels. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Sorry, I missed that too. Okay, so we'll go through the checklist. I talked to April about confirming absolutes that, you know, maybe weren't so clear. So it is on Highway 12, so we can say that applies. No commercial in overlay, the map, no commercial in overlay. It looks like the map of the ranch is the ranch, and there's, but of course you have used this as a guest ranch already. So,
right? Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I would say this applies. Anybody who has any comment on any of these things, please feel free to. I don't know how else to go through this. So the water course buffer on the map, it's absolute and it seems to comply. Moderate slopes also complies. It looks like it's all basically in the farmland area, the development. Water crossings, there's no water crossings roads-wise. Is that what that includes?
Mm-hmm.
Is anybody, okay. Okay, so natural features. Again, the map seems to imply the natural features, and this is a relative. Does anybody have any opinion on this? I think it's visually not visible from the road. It's, I guess that.
So this is kind of where, let's see, where are you at? What number?
2E, sorry.
So when you got to do the, let's see. Yeah, okay. So this is where you're going to start assessing points and everything. Right. You need to.
I'm going to give it a 2, a plus. Does anybody have any objections to that?
No. Which one was that again?
2E. 2E. Retaining vegetation. I feel that it's not applicable.
Yeah.
Or not relevant. As the project has already been. I mean, there's no development in it. So.
Yeah, and they are retaining vegetation. So.
Yeah. Well, there's. I think this refers to any kind of new development. Protection, protecting vegetation.
Did you give a point for that? Yep.
That's okay, that's relevant. So I would say, I guess the.
Isn't this the one that
zero?
It's got a mistake and it should be plus 2, Peg. From negative 2 to plus 2, isn't that the one that's
3? He actually said that was.
Okay.
The way
okay.
It's supposed to be.
So it's zero.
Okay.
That's the vegetation.
Yes. Protecting vegetation. That's actually an absolute, but there's no new disturbance. So I don't understand that, which I think is not relative. So
they are protecting there because they're not changing. So it's an absolute, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're not. Yeah.
Okay. And again, if they were developing something and we were looking at the property,
that they were actually going to do development, this would be more of an issue for that particular thing. And there's no new development on this property. We can have the discussion on that for improving this. Utilities.
Yep, stormwater is an absolute, you know.
And you can confer that, okay, so this is conferred by our zoning administrator, and access to Highway 12, they have legal access to the property.
It's an application.
Okay. Access to other roads.
They have two interior roads, one's paved, but other access, there's no other access.
Okay. Utilities underground. I mean, utilities were there.
Yeah, they're existing. So
okay. So it's a relative thing. Let's give them a, you know, zero because it's a wash. Dimensional standards. This was a table two on the standards for the setbacks and things, correct? Or no, this is actually the amount of development they can have on the—
Yeah, probably five through, I mean, you can adjust parking for 6B, but 5 through 6C, you know, is probably, it's an absolute and it's not referring to.
Okay.
6B would be, you know, the zone that they're in, but it's not more than 50, so.
Right, so that the only relative that we need to make a decision on is the land use intensity. And according to what I saw, there was, they could even develop more if—
I mean, they can develop more of it. I mean,
right.
So 165 acres, but
right.
They're
right. So
not intending.
So so I would give, that's a relative.
Correct.
So
you need a adequate or values to it.
Right. Does anybody besides me have any comments on that? No. Okay. I'm gonna go with a plus two. How's that? Okay, then outdoor space setbacks. This is also an absolute. Mm-hmm. Outdoor spaces setback within the—
it meets, it doesn't really apply.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Okay, and then the buffering and the screening is a relative.
Yeah, and I can bring up, like, let's see the map. There's kind of the aerial, you know, you can barely see where Highway 12 is, it's the distance from Highway 12, you know.
So right. So I'm going to give that a plus two also. Again, any comments? Let's see. Conflict with the parking.
Yeah. So we can 7C to 8B, since they're absolutes, you know, there's no outdoor sales or conflict of parking, so.
Okay, and I do have one question on this, on the parking. It's obvious that there's plenty of parking for people to park their cars there, but there's no designated necessarily. They are—
there's some in front of the rental units.
Right, yeah. All of the units, yeah, okay.
Can we pull up the map so we can see it instead of look? Because yeah, let me see that. Oh wait, I can't.
That map.
Yeah, I mean that's the best one, basically, right? That shows.
That shows all of the buildings. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can try to zoom in on it.
So I guess there's a living quarters in the shop building. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I actually knew the previous owner, so I spent some time up there. Definitely only spent there
pretty much lived in the shop building the whole time. It's crazy.
Yeah, so the guest home, primary residence, and then the guest room and garage are the units that are
being used
for rentals.
Okay, good to go on. So we are through. We have 8C, outdoor sales. There is no outdoor sales. No, outdoor sales, landscaping. There's no, does not apply. Okay. Okay, conflict with parking. Again, I don't see anything on that. Parking and
parking, traffic mitigation off streets,
and excessive parking.
Yeah, all the way to 10D for absolutes. There's nothing.
Okay, so the next relative is limits on frontage parking. There is no frontage parking. On Highway 12.
No.
It's a zero. Okay. Buffering and scoring is also a relative. Buffering and screening is also a relative. And I think that's clearly they have plenty.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, it seems like it. Thanks for making that note, Colleen. Internal landscaping. Did you give a number to the zero? Well,
we already did it. It's on 7B.
Yeah.
Okay, so what did I do? 7B, I gave it a 2. So we'll give it a 2, plus 2. Okay. Internal landscaping. That's a relative. I don't think this really applies either.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at, let's see, some other pictures.
Yeah. Whatever's around the area.
Yeah. Around the area, it's mostly lawn in front of the guests, and then the ranch.
Yeah, I mean, let me see if I can.
Is the, are you, yeah. yeah. I mean, you're, basically it's lawn.
Basically it's lawn.
All and some trees. Yeah.
Trees.
I'll say the plus 2 on that one. No, wait. That's, there we go. Internal landscaping. Building access is also a real, access to the buildings seems appropriate.
No, that's the orientation, right?
Yeah.
That's like, if you could see the building, is it just presenting the solid face to the highway? Is
Most commercial developments don't want a straight on, they want kind of an angle.
Right.
You can't see the property, the actual buildings from Highway 12.
Okay, that's just not applicable. We'll just go 0 for that. Okay.
Then you got 12A, 12B,
let's see. Hazardous. Outdoor lighting.
They're all absolutes. There's given the fact that it's an existing business that has been in use and there hasn't been complaints, I feel they meet the requirements.
Okay. Yeah. And go ahead.
I agree.
Okay, and then buffering and screening.
We have it on
again. I said plus 2 before, so let's do that.
The buffering screening for 13B is in regards to
any of the other things.
Is it in regards to the solid waste?
Right.
And since they've been dealing with their solid waste management.
Okay.
I haven't.
Is that good with everyone? Okay. Let's just do 0 for
one. Yeah, and then you kind of go down. Number 14 signs, they do have a sign on Highway 12, but it's
within the sign ordinance. Yeah, I looked at all that. That seems they're all covered.
Yeah, and then, you know, you have 15, 16. It doesn't really apply to them. And then there are accessory dwellings for 18A. It's existing, so... So the question would be for 18B is employee housing. They do have a staff on site.
Okay.
So you can give a number to that.
That's relative. So,
yeah.
Okay. So we'll just give them a one. Okay.
Do you want one or two?
I mean, give them a two because they do, or they're providing housing for
employee. Okay. Let's do that. If for some reason, my list is not complete. So thank you very much.
And then the next one is 19A. Well, all of 19, I would probably say you just need to go buy them, but they are existing.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you want to give them pluses or a zero.
Way ahead in pluses. They're just.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you want to just do the wash,
we'll do the wash on all of these
existing things.
Okay. A wash on all of 19?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
From reflectivity,
yep.
Color, building lines,
yep.
Detached one.
And then the last one would be 20 is local value added.
What's that again?
Well, okay, so they're providing housing. They're keeping the green belt status. I mean, they're keeping the farm.
Don't you have beef too that you used in your restaurant?
Yeah.
Value you added?
Yes. Okay. So I'd say a plus two. Okay. All right.
Two.
Any other questions regarding the application? Or
thank you.
12 positive points.
I'm just saying that I don't have a question. I just kind of have a comment. Thank you for going through this with us, April.
So can I have a motion to approve this CUP?
I will make a motion that this outstanding application be approved.
I'll second that.
Can I have a vote for a roll call vote here?
John Brath, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Shelley Price Gibson, aye.
Amy Hughes, aye.
Tina Carlson, aye. You will actually get this in 20 days. A total, you know, a full-on report for you on your CUP.
Is that going to come in a block?
It should.
Black. No, that's
no.
That's
thank you. Thank you for your time.
That's your business license. Is your flag? Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Planning Commission. Okay, so the next thing on our discussion, you know, the discussion on options for promoting affordable housing and ag. Let's discuss what Lee told us, and then I think it's a lot about discussing moving forward on anything that he has shared with us, and also I think it needs to include things that we want to also continue with as far as possibilities of changing for the open space and attainable housing. So I'll open it up to the planning commissioners.
So I have a question about, and it hasn't been addressed yet, but when we see the formulas that Lee has created, that we just looked at. I'm wondering about the infrastructure as far as when you take those lots and divide them down into 1 acre lots, what happens? Do they all have to have their own well? There's no infrastructure in place for all of those houses. Like, how do they all attach to power? How do they all get their water? There's no infrastructure anywhere here in town. So that's kind of what I'm really wondering about. When you take and make those lots all smaller, how does that work?
And who pays for it?
And who pays for it?
Okay. Let me summarize, because this these are excellent questions. Okay. For yours first, developer has to pay for development.
Yeah.
However, some towns have a different mechanism where a developer pays a impact fee to the city, and the city puts in the infrastructure. But globally, we do not have a public water system. We have a private water system and so forth.
We don't have any sewer anywhere either, right?
Now, on that one, which you brought up, what Lee did not mention, but he and I had discussed, in the minimum lot size, you basically, it is almost impossible to get a septic and a well on a 1 acre lot.
Right.
So I think anything less than 5 acres would have to be tied to having piped in water. Either a Boulder Farmstead connection or a private water company, which is how Boulder King Estates started out. They had their own water well offsite, their own water tank that supplied those houses. Eventually Boulder Farmstead took that over. But yes, you would have to have offsite piped water with 1 acre lots. That would have to be just an absolute condition. As far as how other infrastructure would work, it becomes, as you brought up, Shelley, it's a tremendous cost to run to remote lots. And Ray Gardner is finding the same thing. The further you are from the road, the more your costs run up. Again, looking at Boulder King Estates, you've got the power lines in the street, you've got the transformer boxes in the street, you've got the fiber optic in the street. So it becomes much more economical when you've got the small lots to run the infrastructure than to run them great distances.
And every one of those lots have wells, don't they?
No, they have. They are all in Boulder Farmstead water now.
I'm talking about, and I shouldn't say, I didn't mean that basically, but still talking about sewer.
Yeah.
So each one of those lots has their own septic.
Yes.
I need to say septic. I say sewer, but I mean septic.
Yes.
So that's another thing. I mean, we talk about basically, you know, what that's doing as far as all these wells and how we're trying to get kind of away from that.
Yeah.
When you start doing a subdivision like this, can you create a septic for the community? I mean, what does that take? And can we require them to do that?
Yes.
As far as the, you can. As the developer, if they're going, I mean, it's not it doesn't seem like an incentive. I mean, but yeah, I'm just kind of concerned about this infrastructure thing. Septic and the water and the power.
It's a very,
and we haven't talked about any of that when he's talked about breaking these down. And I'm just really curious about how that works.
Well, I think this is, you know, what I had encouraged Lee was tonight just talk about the big picture.
Yeah.
Are we willing to consider using density as an incentive to get developers to preserve open space and create housing?
Yeah.
There's a lot of those details. You know, now with Deer Valley or Deer Ranch subdivision,
yeah,
you know, they did septic tests on each proposed lots,
right?
You know, which we basically require that now, that they have. So the whether it's suitable, if somebody tried to do houses on slick rock, which it wouldn't be allowed because they couldn't pass septic. So yeah, that's right. That have infrastructures there, but yeah, generally it's much cheaper to put in the infrastructure for smaller lots, because you have less distance to run to each lot. But you know, we would have to be addressing that. We'd have to be addressing transportation.
Access.
Roads.
Road access.
Because I think did he show roads in those? Well, I mean, were those double lines or what? So there's no roads in those either.
That was just a concept of right. being able to fit lots in. He's yeah. not talking about
yeah. So I that. Yeah, I but see.
I think what would really help, you know, is if you go up and look at Boulder King Estates.
Yeah.
Those are 0.9 acre lots, I believe.
Some are bigger, some are smaller.
Yeah, because they took they're the less minus the road.
Yeah.
But they're hidden in the pinyon juniper. You drive by on the highway, you don't even realize there's a subdivision there.
Yeah.
But that is probably a good way to look at what a cluster would look like. Now that's 40 some lots.
Was it ever on agriculture land? It wasn't. I can't see that it ever was. It's so rocky.
No, it was never.
But that's also where he's talking about transferred development rights, that if you want to retain farmland in one location, yeah. you can find another location like the estates and put housing there.
Right.
Yeah. So we preserve the field.
My key one is what I do not have a soul opinion about anything, because I don't have any interest of outside of just living here, right? So I want to do what the people want here. And what I see is they love the town the way it is. And it's been that way for a long time. And then I'm looking at other parts where affordable housing has to be addressed, because how do we run this place without these young people being in here or anybody to afford to come in here, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a tough one. But if we talk about 5 minimum acre from changing that, okay, are we going to farmers that have all this agriculture and say, okay, you have an option to your property now of taking part of it and putting into a clustered area? Is that what we're doing?
In many cases, I mean, that's one way to do the incentive that you are. Incentive that when many of the ranches, because they're homesteaded as rectangles, have rocky areas that were never irrigated.
Yeah.
So you have to say, well, in exchange, that's what his example was. He said, instead of taking your entire parcel and chopping it up into rectangles, why don't you keep the, we'll give you an incentive. You keep the field as agriculture and then put the housing where it's not agriculture.
See, I love that, but you'd have to really go through our plot, our zoning area,
yeah.
and say what areas they could do that, right?
Well, I would say our job as planning is to create the ordinances that allow it. And this is why the landowners have to come to the table and say, if Gladys, if Randy, the person who just bought Jackie's ranch want to do a project like that, they have to be the ones who figure out what they want to do. Our job would be to make it possible, because under our current ordinances, it's not possible to do something creative like that.
Because of the 5 acres.
Mm-hmm.
The 5 acres and the 3-to-1 lot size. It just basically says the only thing you can do under our ordinance right now is chop it up into rectangles.
So another thing we talk about how to save our open agriculture or ag lands, because right now they're being watered and they provide hay. Most of those fields provide hay, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're trying to get away from, I mean, I shouldn't say we're trying to, but ranching basically is
what it is.
But it's a dying, it's something that's dying out. It's almost a fact that ranching is dying out in a way, right? And so we have this agriculture. And so what the thing that I'm wondering is, if we're trying to bring people in here to have smaller lots and they want to farm with that water that's being used for open fields, that's a type of agriculture net too, yeah, right?
Right?
But it's just different.
Right.
And so I'm wondering, so we're taking the agricultural fields but we're putting farmers on them. So if we want to bring farmers into town, that is going to have to change, right? Do you see what I'm saying?
I'm not sure.
I think basically it's providing the
keeping the agricultural land available for however the farmer or the person who owns the land wants to deal with it in an agricultural way.
But if you're going to break those lots up and then you're going to have farmers on 1 acre parcel, 2 acre parcels even, you're going to have to take some of that water and give it to them, right? So that they can create their farms on these 2.5 acre lots. Does that water get transferred from from the fields? Does that, I want to use an example so badly and it's kind of hard. So but I don't know how to without using somebody's name or just an example. Okay, so Smith has, so Smith has this property and they want to break it up to give to farmers. And so it changes that open field agriculture. That water is now going to be going to farmers, which is a type of agriculture, isn't it?
Water rights is what.
Water rights. Yeah, exactly. So I'm looking at this too, as far as I wonder how many of these fields we're going to be able to continue to leave open if we're trying to create smaller lots for farmers who are, you know what I'm saying?
I don't know if he's wanting to create that. I mean, people may do that.
Yeah.
If they purchase that property, but it's not, that's not the incentive that we're trying. I think
it's just something I've been thinking about.
You're bringing up some good issues. One thing that happened that, I will use people's names. When Gib Smith subdivided some of that land that he had,
yeah,
he sold the land without water rights, sold the water rights separately from the land, which has left people like Eric Filer, who is trying to do small scale agriculture.
Exactly.
And Eric is doing it entirely on culinary water.
Right.
But
I just feel like it's something that we're going to be in. I don't know. I've just been thinking about it.
Yeah.
And I just, that's one of my, it's not a concern. I think the
smaller attainable lots are not necessary. Some may be, larger. And an acre, you can have a pretty good sized garden.
Oh. And then another thing that I'm concerned about too is we keep talking about Boulder Farmstead. So Boulder Farmstead can say yes or no to any of these projects. Is that correct?
They have they're a public utility under state law. They cannot be arbitrary about whether they provide service or not. But the engineering feasibility can be an issue. They can't get if they don't have a pipeline.
Exactly.
So like our area,
yeah,
we have so many lots, right?
Right,
farmer. Stead has only designated so many for those lots. That's it.
Yeah.
We can't get any more.
Right. So
that's what would happen.
Because I just feel like when we did the minor subdivision, about it being an incentive if we use Boulder Farmstead instead of people using wells. And I feel like we kind of got into trouble with that.
But if we're talking affordable housing, they're not going to want wells. They can't afford it.
Yeah. So, I'm just concerned about, I just want to make sure that Boulder Farmstead, if we, these smaller lots, that they're going to provide water for them.
From what I've heard recently, they have at least 200.
Yep.
But is it, like you said, I guess by the state, they have to help the community or they have to provide.
Yeah, I would have to research out. One of the issues, of course, does affect your property is that and stops several thousand feet from your property.
Yeah.
So, the probably that if you wanted water down where you are, you'd have to pay for the extending the line.
Exactly. So the contractor
it forces the development, affordable development has to be pretty much near the existing water lines.
Well, exactly. And that's another thing that I've been thinking about. So then you know, you're wondering how many of these ranchers were going to let or let do this. So, and in, you have to be, you, it, one of the criteria basically is that you are within the Bogler farmstead, which is what we talked about with the minor subdivisions.
Right.
If you wanted to create, so you see kind of where I'm getting at in a way?
Yeah, I think
so. I'm just, it's just something I've been thinking about.
Yeah, no, we should talk, we should talk offline about that. You know, again, I always come back to that our job as a planning commission is to create ordinances that let people do things that are desirable.
Yeah.
They have to figure out how to do it and whether it makes sense for them and whether they're willing to do it.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Can we an area, a farmer that has 60 acres, like his example, and they want to sell part of it and make a cluster, right? Can, is there any way that we can keep agriculture agriculture? Do we have that much power?
Yeah, we currently have extension. We currently have, if you want to cluster 50% of that acreage, Sean brought that up, you know, he was going to keep that and it has to be under, I forget what.
Conservation
easement.
Land.
And so.
Clarify what you just said, I missed it.
So, example, Deer Ranch. He brought in a suggestion of clustering so he could get 2.5 acres. And the lots. 40 remain lots. The 40 remaining acres was going to be in a conservation easement. And so that allowed him to do 2.5 acre lots instead of 5 acre lots. So we do have that capability right now. It's not a great incentive because it's not effective to try to do that.
But I
thought so you can mandate that it stays in agriculture.
Not really. Yes. No. We can't mandate under our current ordinances. The town could rezone. I don't know whether I don't think they have the political will to rezone. The town, in theory, could rezone to keep some land permanently agriculture. That's within their authority, but would be a very political person.
Yeah.
Right now, under our ordinances, every bit of private land in Boulder could be cut down to 5 acre lots. Well, every bit that's in the GMU, which is most of the private land in Boulder, can be developed as 5 acre lots. That takes all of that, those productive fields out of existence, and it would look like some of these towns in Southwest Colorado, where the old ranches were just, you know, divided up into these little ranchette subdivisions. I don't think that's what our ordinances allow. I don't think that's what any of us want for Boulder, because it would drastically change it, because most of those would be investor second homes. So, you know, so that's what we're trying to find is incentives that would make a landowner as a willing participant say, I want to preserve this land to make it affordable for me. You, Boulder Town, have to give me an economic incentive that makes the project feasible to preserve their agricultural land. They could farm it themselves. They could lease it to someone who wants to farm. They could lease it to a rancher who needs more winter grazing. That's up to them. But we need to kind of get out of the way and make these things, creative things possible.
Okay, see, I'm still stuck on why the 5 acre lot stops them. Because why can't we have both? Because the land demands what can be done with that land. If there's, like you just said, if there's a rocky slope and so on, we can't put it there. We can't get the water. We can't get the septic tanks. Some areas of the farmer's land can't ever raise anything on it.
That's
up to them. To take that land or give them an option to use it, right?
Yeah.
So why can't we have both? If we can mandate 5 acre lots like we have, and put exception for certain areas being approved by the planning commission, because one of the big pictures that I come to the table to communicate, this wonderful thing that I made back in 2017, one of the things I open up to is Boulder, the community, right? It says, okay, this is all the gray is federal, all this light gray is our town.
Yeah.
And in this little lot right here, we don't have a lot. It's precious, isn't it? Look how little that is in the way. And if you go up even more, it's a dot. So you cannot bring back land, you know, once you sell it. It's gone, right? It's precious.
Right.
So we got to be, as a planning commission, I just see the real responsibility of it, that we should only use it in the parts. Cluster, I think, is an answer. But when we cluster and we take them out of 5 acres, you know why they put them in 5 acres, right? Because USDA and the water regulations, they have to have so much land, put wheel lines, pods, pivots, and so on. If you don't have that much land, they won't do it. They won't look at it. And then you have soil conservation and you have all that that goes with USDA. So if you have an acre lot and
you can't get a lot
affordable of USDA. Housing, yeah, affordable housing, these young poor people or old poor people that want to do something to this land, it's not a, you know, it's not able to help them out because you've got to turn your crops, and the USDA says, okay, right now the crop that we will help you with is this one, and it's going to be a good one for your area because you need to rotate it, and it's good for the soil, right? We know that. Anyway, that's the issue I'm looking at, is all of them, of how it's going to go back. Why can't we have both?
Well, I think we would. I mean, that's the thing. If you can take rather than taking, like me, it's hypothetical, taking 60 acres and chopping it up into 5 lots, you know, keep that irrigated field as a single parcel that can be managed. And like I say, I think it's up to the landowner to really figure out what makes economic sense. Our job is to make it possible for them to do it, and get, because we're creating some barriers that force people to do things they don't really want to do, because that's what our ordinance requires, and it's the only way they can make money off their land is to subdivide. So we're forcing them to do something bad for the town that they don't want to do.
Yeah.
So I think that's what we're trying to work toward.
You're laughing because you see that I get a picture, don't you?
Yeah.
And the challenge of this.
And that's why I get, you know, we really do need the involvement of the landowners to give input into this. What discussion
is this true what I'm saying though?
Well, yeah, and cattle is a whole different.
Yes, please.
We're all okay,
we have actually came up to
and state your name.
Brandy Hardman. We have actually been working, me and my husband Ron, on a land trust that is similar to this. So that if we had the opportunity to sell acres of land, it would almost have to be as like an HOA. So there's certain requirements that we would have the residents do, you know, and they'd have to keep up, like, you know, certain aspects of, you know, the agriculture, or that, you know, they can, you know, tear it up, and they have to keep improvements on the land. And so, and they would be, they could only build on certain parts of that land. And then it just depended on, you know, what kind of business they were going to bring in. And we would almost create our own like application process. But that's really out in Salt Gulch, because there are so many ordinances that you would have to follow for the town of Boulder. And even if you put it into 5-acre lots, like the minimum amount that you're even selling the land for is $100,000. And then you've got to develop it, then you've got to put a home on it. All of a sudden you're talking $500,000. That's not really affordable. But if there are ordinances where on a 5-acre lot, you could put more than one home, then that might change things.
Yes.
You know, so it's not even, so then you could say 2.5, or it could be, you know, somebody, you know where I'm saying. So that is a cluster within a 5-acre. But I would be more than happy to share our information that we've done in trying to develop this land trust so that it keeps the integrity of the land, but it makes it so
so that, yeah, it doesn't become developed and we do keep the agriculture and there's got to be some sort of, you know, and they can't resell it to somebody else, that would develop it. So then we don't get these big apartment complexes, these big, you know, things that are, you know, I mean, even though that is more affordable, but one other thing that I would like to bring up is that one thing that hasn't been looked at is just the cost of building and allowing for more natural home building to be included. There are a lot of different, less expensive ways to build right now, from, you know, hemp to, you know, aircrete and things like that that really do offer opportunities for the actual building of the home instead of the traditional, which is very wasteful and it is very expensive.
Yes.
So, but I think there's a solution to all of it. And it just depends on how you want to manage. And, you know, one thing you guys did bring up is, you know, the buffering, even with headwaters, that's really, you know, that's a very easy thing to do by growing, you know, planting trees, you know, and requiring that buffering to do if they were to do a clustering. So it still, you know, creates that integrity, but, you know, you've got to take a lot of things into consideration, you know, with roads and how roads are built and how water is distributed. You know, we've just had a really heavy winter this winter and we've learned a lot from that. And so I think there's, you know, there's a lot of benefit and providing the future of the town is in the young families. And, you know, if we lose that, then what's Boulder going to be?
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'd like to bring this discussion to a close. I'm thinking that this should be something that we discuss as far as putting a little more work into this and having training sessions and also getting information out so that we can all read it about these different options so that we can be have a little more understanding of that. So I would say that this needs to go to a training session. Do you have any other comments? Elena, you good?
I'm good.
Okay.
I just have one more comment on the clustering. I think we should be open to it. And our little estate that we went into is a perfect example because these people could afford it because they put things on it and slowly built. You know, so that's another way to consider it. So
great.
You're right, table it and we'll talk later.
Okay, so let's see, process of improvement, do you want to go through that at all?
Okay, yeah, we can go through that. I'll try to make it quick.
Getting over time.
Yeah, already. All right. Okay, so this is really discussing the CUP process here. You know, as we saw tonight, it took about half an hour in the public meeting to go through a fairly straightforward application. And it's sort of a burden to expect everybody to do it. And if there's issues that the applicant needs to go back and work on, it's hard to do an iteration in a public meeting. So I think we do need to improve our process. I've got... There were four suggestions after Lee and I kind of batted this around as far as what to do. I'm going to focus though on the third one first, which is defining the zoning administrator duties. You have raised some very valid points, April. You know, I looked at it. There are two things in the ordinance now that are very general. One is the ensure all procedures and provisions of the town land use ordinances, including this chapter, are consistently and equitably applied. And another one is carry out all other functions, duties, and actions as may be necessary to administer this chapter, that's the zoning ordinance, and as may be identified herein. But those are actually very vague. So right now we're saying that, you know, there are several places where you have specific duties determining completeness. And I think we know what completeness is. They've got a document that says topographic map or whatever.
But what I would recommend is that the ordinance be amended to make very clear that the zoning administrator is responsible for working with the applicant to make sure that what is submitted complies with the ordinance. And I think at least we've done a very good thing with the defer to PC, that if you in the app, if you just can't make a decision or the applicant just won't agree to what you're asking, yes, that has to come to the PC, but that should be the exception and the rule. So, but I think it's really in terms of having consistency in the review, having that's a in most communities, that's a staff job to basically vet the applications so that when it comes for approval, it comes with a staff report that not only says it's complete, but sort of as you were doing actually tonight very well, you were saying, well, yes, it meets it. Yes, that meets it. So, but we should make that clear that that's because that is part of your duties, because one other general duty you have is to issue interpretations of the zoning ordinances. So I think your general duties authorize you to do it, but we should make it clear exactly how to do it.
Another thing that, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but we were talking and you brought this up, and as far as having a planning commissioner with each application so that there's a planning commissioner that can also be verified with April so that we're not all sitting here going through this. April went through the whole process, and then if planning commissioner was kind of working with her, then we have somebody that's representative.
Yeah.
And I cannot actually say that right now, that there's something coming up basically in a subdivision. And Brandy, I had told April that I kind of wanted to work with her with Brandy's, except for most of it was done by that point. And there are other ones coming up. So that you have, I really think that we need to do that. And that's how you would incorporate the zoning administrator and planning commission.
Yeah, but I just want to clarify, just make sure, like, I feel comfortable doing on the absolutes of the checklist, but all your other that are not absolutes, the relatives.
Yes,
in applications, I do try to guide them, saying this is with Ray's application and others. I've had discussions with, I think this is what's going to work, this is not what's going to work. I do kind of guide them in that, but I should not be the one when it's relatives making any decisions.
Maybe that's what we should do.
That should not be my job. You guys have been appointed to make these decisions. And I should just be the administrator and making sure everything is checked off and it follows our ordinance. I should not be making judgment calls.
Yeah. Okay. I agree. Yeah, this actually gets into something which I've had several different opinions given to me. Opinions given to me by people who from other planning commissions that I've talked to. I have a little problem with the way that Lee has written those relative standards, because good law, the standard judges always like is that a person of ordinary intelligence should be able to read the plain language of the law and know what conduct is required or prohibited. And that's the feedback I got from a friend of mine who's been on Salt Lake City's Planning Commission. That she said, things should either be allowed or prohibited. Those relative standards can be made more clear to say, for example, trash dumpsters must be screened. It's not a 1 to 5 scale. It's either... It's a required.
So but that's if a development requires a trash dumpster too.
Right. I mean, it's a zero because it's not. What I want to kind of separate is the process from revising the standards. But I think you're right on the judgment calls. I think we're leaving too much to discretion, and we could be a little clearer in the ordinance. So here are the four recommendations, but I did catch Colleen's comment that we probably, it should be CA plus a assigned PC representative to do that out of before the meeting review.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one I was going to recommend, and these would all require ordinance changes, but we could probably have this ready for next month. First one would be to remove the current checklist from the ordinance. Because right now, to even renumber the paragraphs, we have to have two public hearings on council vote. What we then have to do, though, is put back in the state law is very clear that any conditions we impose have to be based on objective standards in the ordinance. So some of the things that we are scoring these applications on only appears right now on the checklist. Those things would have to be put back into the ordinance, and that would be a good time to make it a little clearer on these relative standards, what is acceptable and what's not. But if we take out the checklist, we would have to put some things back in.
And I disagree with that totally because, and I'm sorry, I Leah also sent us a memo on March 24th as far as why the history on why we did what we did, what the processes that we went through, all of the things that we did. And so I don't want to look at getting rid of the checklist. I disagree with
out of the ordinance. No other jurisdiction has checklists.
So where does it go?
It goes into an administrative procedure. So we take his new application.
Maybe I shouldn't have jumped in.
That's quite all right. So the first one was to remove the current checklist from the ordinance because it's got numbering wrong and all that. We have to put back in the ordinance certain things that are in the checklist so that they are in an ordinance. We then put Lee's new application and the instructions into an administrative procedure, which means that there's the flexibility that we can reword it, we can clarify it, we can renumber things, we can add more detail without having to amend the underlying ordinance. So we would keep the checklist. It would probably be the new format checklist that Lee has given us.
Yeah, right. Yep.
But that would be not codified in the ordinance because then again, if we find is a typo, we have to have a public hearing. We have to send it to town council. They have to have a public hearing. They have to amend the ordinance to change it. If it's in the ordinance, yes.
Does any change?
So that's
trying to speed it up a little bit.
Make the process work better.
Okay, good.
So the checklist would be an administrative procedure. Under those administrative procedures, the applicant would sit with the zoning administrator and with a PC representative. They would go through, the applicant would be responsible for explaining why their application gets a good score, basically. If April says, well, that's going to get a -1, the guy's going to say, well, okay, I'm going to have to change this and this. How's that? Okay, that gets you a 0.
But again, she would not be necessarily part of the relative decision. Yeah.
Well, I think the relative things are very problematic.
Okay, I would like to table this particular discussion right now. Your list, just continue with your list. Let's not get into the discussion of it. Yeah. We need to have that at another time. Yeah,
I want to. Okay, well, the four changes we would need to do would be
clarification of this.
Get rid of the current. Remove checklist. The current checklist from the ordinance.
Move it to
a administrative procedure.
Got that. Okay.
And then what we have to do is develop the administrative procedure.
Right.
And we have to also better define the zoning administrator's duties. And I think the things about changing the standards and fixing the relative standards, yes, whether we can take that as a separate one, because once the checklist procedure is out of the ordinance, we now have the flexibility to tweak it as we need to.
Okay. Can you send me that file?
Which file?
What you're reading from.
Yeah, I'll send that.
Yeah, I'd like to know, like when you're doing this, I would like to know, like last month, you presented something and why we don't I would like to have seen this ahead of time. Like, this is something that we should have been able to have before us a week ahead so that we could go through this. So and you did the same thing last month. Like, you brought something before us that we don't get a chance to look at. You know, this kind of information should all have had before the meeting, because I'm not going to make a decision. I don't think anybody.
Well, I'm just giving John a chance to present it, and then we're not making any decisions here, but. Again, we're a little on a time.
And when are we going to get to see it?
Okay, so what I'm proposing is that I will work with Lee to put those four things in more formal language as an agenda item for the next meeting. And definitely that should be to you 10 days before in writing.
And
give us the consult Lee at this point? Exactly. This is your suggestion. No, and then we should go.
I talked with Lee all this afternoon.
Yeah, but what about
okay, what so, about her? So what about me? I'm presenting to now a plan of a proposed action that I would work on in the next month and get it to you. One of the constraints is it's very hard to. We have to avoid having a unofficial meeting electronically. So this puts constraints that if I send stuff out, I really need to get it to Peg and have Peg distribute it to the whole PC.
But that's the way we've always done it, and I don't see that there's a problem with that. Basically, as far as. We need to have this information as a planning commission. I don't know. I'm just trying to tell you how I feel about it.
I respect.
And it was just like last month too. Like you had information that we didn't have, and you would have liked to have had us move on it.
No, I didn't want. Okay, I should make clear. And in this case again, where I'm all.
And all I'm asking you is that if you would just please try to distribute like some of this, and this isn't what I'm looking at, it's what you were reading.
Yeah,
I feel a little frustrated, basically, and I don't think I'm the only one.
Okay,
thank you.
I will respect
you. You have such amazing information, but I'd like to see it ahead of time.
I will I appreciate that. So, okay, so where we'll leave it is that do I have, can I put this as an item for next month that I will come with those four items more formalized and they will be distributed in writing well before the meeting?
With Lee? I mean, you're going to talk to Lee about this?
Well, we've already talked, but we have to make it much more formal, much more detailed. Yes.
Oh, I mean, do you guys
cost us?
What?
Do that? It doesn't cost us, does it?
Well, it doesn't make any difference. Lee is our part of our. He's extremely
our advisor.
Yeah, he's. Yeah. I mean, he's generous. It's his background.
Right. Yeah.
It's his background.
Yeah.
So, I make a motion that's fine.
No, I don't want to make any kind of.
No, we don't need a motion. I just. This was basically to present to bring such you. I don't. Yes, to bring keep you in the loop. Okay, so that's what I'll work on in the next month. Is coming up with some more specific recommendations to make the CUP process work better now that we've had some experience with it.
Yeah, and that I'm with Colleen. It would be nice to know ahead of time when it's regarding my job.
Yes.
And discussion.
And
about
when we're
that.
Supposed to make. Yeah.
Well, I'm not asking for any discussion.
Any information of your thoughts, it would be helpful. Or any planning commission person who have thoughts, it would be nice beforehand to kind of know what's going to be discussed.
Can do that.
And the problem with, you know, handing out the information is that there's no decisions made.
Right.
Before
it's just,
the meeting.
It's just information.
It's information. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, we comment it. Even can we even do comments?
I don't believe so. You just distributed this file and then said this is for your consideration.
Yeah,
and then it goes out to everybody,
and then the discussion can be done at the meeting.
Exactly, and you don't have a discussion on you just have the information.
Yeah, exactly.
Could I, Nancy, are you still there?
Yes, she's there.
I am.
I just wanted to respond to what was just said. You can share information, but you can't have an email conversation about it or make comments on it to the other planning commissioners other than in a public meeting. So, John, I think if you ahead of time said, I'm going to offer some suggestions. These are what they are. We'll talk about them at our next meeting or something to that effect. It would at least give people the opportunity to see it as background info. I know in a past life, we would get a packet of information typically put together by staff, but you know that's not the option here, ahead of time that we would review before the meeting. And so, we don't talk to each other about it necessarily, but we do it that in public.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry, John. Okay, we have just a couple more things on this agenda that future training. I think we need to all decide what future training we want to have. And I think that should be sent out to all of us. Everybody give their thoughts about future training that you need specifically. And we'll get that together. The overview of this subdivision development changes definitely could be helpful with some kind of workshop for us. Not workshop necessarily training, but a workshop. Training being separate. So if you wanted to put together something that would be your list of desires, goals for the planning commission, first, second, third. Let's just personally think about that, all of us, and see if we can get them accumulated all together and see where we're at going forward on those either workshops training sessions.
Can I make it just one meeting that's coming up? The ULCT, did you see that one on April 5th?
Yeah, that's one that Lee will need to help us through too. And I definitely, there is a recording of it too.
There was a recording. I wish I'd known that because I stopped everything to watch it live. But yeah. They have one starting the first week in May, another one.
Uh-huh.
So be aware that's coming up.
Okay, great. Thank you. There's a lot of homework that we end up having to do. And I just think that we need to kind of be on the same goal to finish before we're starting adding others.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's all I want to say about that. Does anybody else want to say something?
Tina, can I make a comment here?
Sure.
I did watch the training. I felt like I was at the open end of a fire hose with all of the stuff that they presented. And it would be, and I'm getting up to speed on a lot of the Utah regulations, but it would be incredibly helpful. And I know, Peg, you sent out that summary of all the state legislative changes. It'd be incredibly helpful if Lee or someone could go through and flag those that are relevant to us in Boulder that we're going to have to do something about, because I mean, I think there are a lot that aren't, but there definitely are some, and there are timelines, dates associated with them. So maybe that's part of the training, but just to highlight those that we are going to have to pay attention to and do something about at some point in time.
Right. And again, the other issue here is, like, do we spend that hour in our planning commission when we feel we can to have Lee do specific things, including flagging and talking about what the Utah law we need to have review or change in our ordinance because of the Utah laws. So I think that could be within Lee's training with us in the beginning of our meeting, or we decide that we needed a training session with him other than our regular meeting.
Well, even if he took the document that Peg distributed and just checked the ones that we're going to have to think about at some point. That would be useful to me, whether we have an hour-long training from him. That's sort of pre-work.
Okay, check the document. Okay, got it. Okay, great. Thank you, Nancy.
I also think that we should think about having training once a month along with our meetings. I mean, I really feel that we have so much information anymore coming to us, and we're trying to do all these things. You know, it's like John has so much information and Lee has all this information, and we're trying to cram all this into a 2-hour meeting. And I feel like we're almost at a point where, and I know this is our time, where, you know, we don't get paid for any of this, but we need more training. We need more time basically together as a group to be able to hash out some of this information, that it's not in our meeting, that we're trying to, you know, keep at 2 hours. And I think we should really look into that as far as adding a meeting a month or some kind of training together, or it's just a suggestion, but okay. We just have so much, I feel like, that we're trying to process through.
I think that's an excellent suggestion. You know, Salt Lake City Planning Commission actually, they've got a budget to get by dinner. So what they actually do is have a dinner meeting that's a public meeting training session before the regular business meeting. They do that every month. So
yep.
It's not
adding it to their actual business meeting.
Well, it's open to the public because they have a quorum present usually. But yeah, it's a training session before the regular business meeting.
Yeah, I'm sorry, my mind will not work that well.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
That's too long a day.
It is.
It's too long of a time. There's also, I mean, I think that Garfield County has 2 meetings per month.
I was just going to say that many planning commissions meet twice a month.
Yeah.
And are we getting to that point? I really think we are.
I know I'll be trained in 5 years.
Hopefully. Yeah, well, we'll get better, right?
Okay,
so.
Can I say something else?
Sure.
We bypassed bylaws. Can we table that?
Well, it was being moved down.
I'm
sorry.
Down.
That's right.
Okay.
I forgot.
So I'll bring this up when we do the business for next month. So.
Yeah. Okay. So we can't make the decision whether we're going to have two meetings a month.
How do we do that, Peg?
Make a motion.
You can make a motion.
You can decide it.
Well, do we want to do that right now?
Well, needs to make a motion that you feel like you would like to attest the waters.
Yeah. I guess I'd like to make a motion that we begin to have training meetings every month, and then we have our planning commission meetings that we use as our regular planning commission meeting, and that we have separate training meeting once a month.
Do I have a second?
I'll second it. Make a motion to second it, sorry.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion at all?
I think just for probably we get better, we will have to make these as public meetings, which is no problem.
Mm-hmm.
We are generally set up for Zoom, which, because I know in my own case, two different weeks a month would meet. Run into some other travel stuff more. So as long as we have an electronic option, I think it's a great idea.
Could I make a motion? I'd like to make a motion.
Middle of a motion.
Okay, sorry.
So we seconded it, and John, yeah, we're in the discussion.
Okay.
Are you making an amendment to the motion?
No.
Okay.
So, all right. So it's, well, yeah, I am. No. Sorry.
That's okay.
No, right. It probably goes with it, but go ahead. Let's just make the motion.
Well, right now we haven't set a time.
We haven't set a time or set. Elena, did you want to have a
comment?
Yeah, I don't feel ready to commit to that right now. So I am going to vote no on that. It doesn't mean I will never be, that I'm not open to doing twice. I'm tired at the end of this meeting and I'm not ready to commit to doing it.
Okay, so, all right. So we had motion and a second. Can I have a vote from the commission whether we have training meetings once a month plus a regular meeting? Can I have a vote from the commission?
I'll vote yes, Colleen Thompson.
I vote yes, Shelley Price Gibson.
I'm going to abstain on this one because I think we haven't figured because I think you made a great suggestion to figure out our training needs first, but we should revisit it. So I'm going to abstain.
Yeah, I'm going no, Elena Hughes.
Oh, okay. Well,
we'll table it for now.
We'll table it for now.
I'm happy to revisit it. I just, I'd want to know what we're going to be trained on, when this meeting's going to be. I need a fresh mind and more information is all I'm saying.
Great, great. Yeah. Thanks, Elena. I agree. I can put one together really fast. I make a motion that we put some goals on our next thing of how we split it. We're going all over the place. Okay, set goals. Yes. Okay. First thing is our obligation, obviously, but then think about it. But our motion is to make goals for next time we meet. And that will proceed. Is that an easy motion?
I think procedurally we could just put that down as an item for next month's business.
Yeah. Good. That's good.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Okay, so I have final comments and let's see, we have
did you wanna go to your number 8?
Oh gosh, number 8.
That can be tabled to
I can table that to the next meeting. I did use it tonight, most of it. So, well,
what did you use?
I used the final bylaws that we were going to address tonight. So we'll table it to the next meeting. Okay, final public comments. It looks like we have JWJAD.
That's Judy, and I believe Ashley had his hand raised
first. Okay, Ashley, if you would like to make a comment.
I didn't have my hand raised. I think somebody accidentally just looked like it, but I didn't have my hand raised.
Oh, thanks, Ashley. Appreciate that. Okay, and is that?
Oh, I guess that's. Okay. No one.
Oh. Okay. All right. Any other? I don't see any other public comments or chats or anything. So, final staff comments.
I definitely have some.
Oh, great.
Can I use your microphone?
Yes, absolutely. Here.
Okay. Thank you. I just a couple things that have come up in this meeting, plus a couple things I wanted to mention. Regarding the subdivision development changes that was part of that document, that Utah League of Cities and Towns document, that reporting that you listened to. As Lee, I think, indicated, there are significant and substantive changes that basically would require a rewrite of the subdivision ordinance anyway, mostly procedural things on how you handle an application and the whole review process. But the elements are so sweeping that before you get into really talking about subdivision changes, you have to acknowledge that. I think that's the first training that ought to happen, is for him to flesh in what you got in those documents and say how it does apply to Boulder and what those things are going to be. So
we're affected now, right?
No, the subdivision changes for our size community aren't required till December of 2024. So we've got that much time, but we take time to do stuff, so we will need every bit of that time.
And so, but I wondered, some of those said that communities 5,000 and less.
We're considered class, or no, that's the county.
Yeah, we are.
Or more, I meant, yeah. Or more.
We're a frontier town. I mean, we don't even qualify as rural. So
a lot of those were towns of 5,000 and more. Yes. I didn't mean less. Yeah. I meant more.
Yes, but there's
so that's what I'd like to see is like we aren't that size.
He will totally just zero in on what affects us specifically. Yeah. And these are land use development management act. These are LUDMA changes. So this goes back to when this happened in 2008. Which was significant and caused us to rewrite our zoning ordinance and subdivision. Anyway, that'll be a big thing, and that should probably be the first training that he does, because we need to get started on that. And thanks for bringing up the May one as well. I forget what that topic is, but okay. In the bylaws, I just wanted to mention that it currently, I think, calls for quarterly training anyway. So you at least have that in the bylaws as we are using them right now. If you want to amend the bylaws and go to the two meetings a month, I think that's a worthy thing for you to think about. And maybe a way to handle that is you do the training one meeting and business the next, or you do applications one meeting and conceptual process improvement on another meeting. I mean, you can divide it up in different ways, but you are clearly running beyond your capability of handling all your stuff in one once a month meeting in 2 hours. Business not working. So, okay, so there's that. But consider you do have training in your bylaws right now. And finally, I just wanted to ask, please, for the purposes mainly of the Zoom recording audience who depends on listening to these after the fact, it is really difficult to understand what is being said when you talk over each other and have some of these free-flowing discussions like you just had. So if there's a way to, if someone else is speaking, please let them just finish what they are saying and then make your comment, because they're getting too muddled together.
Okay.
I just asked that from the secretarial standpoint.
Thank you.
Those are my comments. Thank you.
Thanks, Peg.
Yeah, although we may have a upcoming concept plan for subdivision for the next meeting.
Okay, thank you. Our final thing is the upcoming business for May 11th. I will ask Lee what he would think is possible, what we should discuss, and I'll let you guys know immediately. I sent out something to you all on my thoughts about the meeting and the agenda. And what we needed to discuss this last time, I don't know if we had a chance to see that. I would like to continue that process. It is really helpful to re-listen to our meeting. It's helpful for you personally. It's helpful for just getting, just rehearing how it went, what was said, and kind of giving yourself your own notes. And Peg says she's going to work on getting in, obviously she can, a little better when she isn't trying to run the meeting so much. She actually can do notes in the meeting. So we probably will get our actual minutes sooner, but I highly recommend everybody listens to the meetings again if they can. They just put in earbuds and watch them do it and listen to the meeting. I don't know. That's what I've been doing, and I found it very helpful. So the upcoming business.
John's four suggestions.
Well, okay, yeah. So I have two items here.
Okay, great.
I can talk about. Incidentally, I like your suggestion about listening to meetings. I wasn't impatient, so I kept looking at my watch. I'm writing down timestamps, so if I want to listen to one section, I don't have to guess where. No. It makes
it interesting, John.
So that's okay. So there are two items I promise that I will have it in writing well in advance of the meeting.
Going to put on the agenda for next
year? Yeah, so one will be those four items. I'll get a briefing paper out in advance, but we'll put that as an agenda item for next week.
The
improvement to the CUP process. The other one, and I think as you people tell, Lee and I spend a lot of time talking to make sure that we don't get on cross purposes at the meeting, that if I have some concern about what he's doing, we vet it in advance so that we don't get a cross purposes. I think smooth things out. Sometimes that doesn't happen until close to the meeting, and that's one reason it's been hard to communicate, but I'll try to do better to share that stuff in advance. But the other one is that he and I have agreed to work together to come up with a bullet list of what we need to do in the subdivision ordinance. And that now he and I both have come to the conclusion we have to replace the ordinance. Those state law changes, we can no longer just fix what we have. So we will. He and I will try to come with a bullet list of what items need to be addressed to start that discussion of the subdivision ordinance. So if, for the agenda item, it would be, I think I called it a working discussion on subdivision ordinance. In advance, and we at least try to come up with a list of the topics that we think need to be addressed.
Yeah.
Which is that the state law changes that apply to us, plus these things related to incentives. So it's going to be a pretty long list. And then I also have that previous list of all the inconsistencies and technical corrections. Yes. So it's going to be a long list. At least we know what we have to work on then and we can start.
Can you, when you're talking to him, I mean, I can also call him, but as you are talking to him specifically on the changes that we need to do, could you ask him if he can send out just a bullet using the training or document that Peg gave us, just saying this we will definitely need to visit, this we definitely need to visit, just, you know, pointing it out to us so that we know, have a little bit more. And then again, on the training, I definitely would listen to that. You don't have to watch that. You can actually just listen to it too. Mm-hmm. You don't have to watch the video. So anyway. Yeah.
So those would be the two items that I will try to get things out in more advance.
Well, and I think the thing that's frustrating to me in a way too, is I know that you and Lee have a relationship and you talk a lot together, but I also feel like we get left out a lot. I mean, I know that you, and so it's you and Lee figuring out a lot of this out, but we don't get input then. And I think that's something I just kind of feel left out sometimes.
Okay.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's tricky, you know,
because of
avoiding it.
Exactly.
In effect, in a larger community, this stuff would be handled entirely by staff.
By staff.
Which we don't have staff. Exactly. And some says I'm kind of doing things that normally would be staff work to get things prepared for the meeting. But the best that we can do is certainly to try to get things out in writing so people have time to look at it and think about it before the meeting. Then you too could call Lee and say, well, hey, I don't understand this, or I'm really concerned about what you and John have come up with.
Yes, thank you. And it's not that I'm concerned, it's just like I feel like I would like to have some input myself at some time.
Certainly.
Because each one of us have this different perspective.
Yes.
You know, as far as even history. Like Tina and I both have history. I mean, you know, as far, and I think that comes in something that needs to be looked at sometimes too.
Yeah.
But I appreciate all that you do, John. I really do. Want you to know that.
Okay. Let me share with you what I modeled this basically on what I was doing when I was on the air quality board, because I learned that those meetings were very well choreographed performances with the public and the press always there.
Yeah.
And what I learned was that if I had any questions that something that the staff had done, and Lee is really our staff.
Yes, that's the other thing. He's our staff.
In advance of the meeting, I would contact the staff engineer who is responsible for it and say, well, I'm going to have this and this and this question at the meeting. I have this concern about what you put in your report. So that I never would blindside them with comments in the meeting that they didn't know were coming.
Yeah.
And in most cases, we would do, as Lee and I are often doing right now, working it out privately. Okay, well, maybe, yeah, you did find a mistake. Let me fix that mistake and get those corrections. So that when it comes to the public meeting, it runs smoothly and the staff and the commission are all working together, not against each other.
Yeah.
But yes, I will see. I will try to keep you in the loop as best I can without violating open meetings. How's that?
And
all I'm
through,
asking.
Through Peg. Through Peg, and we'll be good. Okay.
There will continue to be a staff report on this, on these meetings, and and possibly a conditional use or a concept plan on a subdivision. And if, as things come up this month, I will try and get a draft out to everyone so that they can make comments on it. And if you have something to add, you can make comments on it or say that you want to add something. We will have something on training. Well, our goals for training, that we will definitely do. So goals for training, goals in general. So pass that information around too for us, everybody. Great, thank you. Can I have a motion to adjourn this meeting?
I make a motion that we adjourn the meeting.
I'll second it. Oh, sorry, I can't do that. Can I have a second?
I'll make a motion for a second.
Okay. All right. So it's been moved and seconded.
John, aye.
Colleen Thompson, aye.
Shelley Price Gibson, aye.
Annie Hughes, aye.
And Carlson, aye. Thanks so much, everybody. Good night, work. Guys. Thanks. April.